You are now listening to Conversations with Congressman King. Discussion on issues that impact your life with your representative from Iowa's 5th District.
Welcome to Conversations with Congressman King. This is Steve King here, and each week we bring you a great guest. And this week we have with us the Dean of Iowa State College of Agriculture, Wendy Winterstein, who is a graduate of K-State University and received her Ph.D. in 1988 from Iowa State University, a broad background in agriculture, focusing especially on the pesticide part of this, was part of it. And we're going to get to know Wendy a little bit about what she sees as the future of the Iowa State's College of Agriculture, the research that's going on there, the future of agriculture, all of these things that we're going to try to pack into about 15 minutes today. Welcome aboard, Wendy Winterstein.
Thank you so much, Congressman King. It's a pleasure to join you and get to talk about my favorite topic, and that's Iowa agriculture.
And it really is so much of your life, too, Wendy. And to start this out, could you give us a sense of your background, where you were raised, where you grew up, how you got involved in agriculture, and what brought you to this point of being the dean of the Iowa State's College of Agriculture?
Well, certainly. My parents raised cattle down in southeast Kansas, and they went broke doing that. My mother, I think, cringes every time I say that, but it's the truth. They ended up then, my father taught at a community college in Hutchinson, Kansas. And kind of from that beginning, I had a love of everything out in the nature, so to speak. I started collecting insects when I was about 5 years old and had my own insect zoo. And from there, I just knew that I always wanted to be involved some way in agriculture, and my love of insects really was the venue for me to be able to do that.
What was your hometown in Kansas then?
Hutchinson.
Oh, you said Hutchinson. Okay. And I'm just thinking down there, an interest in entomology. Then down in that country, don't they have praying mantis that are indigenous to that territory down there?
Oh, definitely. And the insect world, of course, is a fascinating world to be in because of the diversity and the very beneficial insect pests like the praying mantis to the very destructive insects that can be on the crops in Kansas.
And you spoke about how it pleased you to watch the Iowa State women win their basketball game here the other day, Wendy. And we joked about that a little bit, how the Iowa State women beat the Kansas State women.
Right.
That when you have that battle between same sex, but what happens when you have a praying mantis in there? Who wins out on that, the male or the female?
Always the female.
Is that game a little bit rigged, or what is? What can you explain what goes on there?
Well, you know, it's just part of nature, and nature sometimes is kind of surprising to people. But there is a process that goes through when the mating of praying mantises, and where you end up with the female essentially decapitating the male and feasting on him.
Feasting. you have to have a little bit of a diabolical sense of humor sometimes to come on this program, Wendy, and I appreciate you your baptism here, but I did study some entomology down at Northwest Missouri State, and then we had the praying mantis down there as indigenous in that area, too, so I caught a few of those and watched them in that process, and I wonder, where's the guy's side of this?
Well, they perform an important function there, so we don't want to overlook that.
Well, maybe on to a little bit of the more serious part of this, and that is, so you came then from K-State on up to Iowa State for your doctorate in entomology, and you've essentially been at Iowa State then since that time, since you completed your doctorate in 1988?
You know, that's correct. I came up and had a great opportunity to work out in the field with Iowa State University Extension for about 4 years, and I decided I didn't want to spend my entire life in a cornfield, and so I did start my Ph.D. while I was working full-time on campus in some of our pesticide management programs, and then I was hired on as a faculty member, so it all adds up to about 27 years now, and so I'm truly an Iowan.
Well, and you're an Iowan by choice, so yeah. I want to congratulate you for that. We always want to celebrate that.
Well, there's no comparison. There's no place in the nation that has the soil resources, the water resources, and really the hardworking, smart folks that we have in Iowa.
Well, I could not agree more. And, you know, I look at the production that flows out of the state of Iowa, and we just added up some numbers, and I'm going from memory here, but they just came in my email here a couple days ago from one of our working staff people out in the district, Wayne Brinks, who takes care of all of our agricultural work in 32 counties. And Wayne has done some calculations, and he'll know exactly the numbers, but he added up the value of Iowa corn, Iowa soybeans, Iowa fed cattle and Iowa fed hogs, and Iowa's ethanol. And that all added up to just a little bit short of $20 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And then of that, only corn brought more value than ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like ethanol has moved up as the number two commodity, but then, of course, you have to put the corn into the ethanol to get it. So
right.
I think if you subtracted the value of the sold corn from the value of the ethanol, you might find out ethanol is worth more than any other ag commodity in Iowa today.
I'd say that we contribute. Our numbers always show we contribute about 25% of the state's industrial output, 21% of the jobs, and of course, we never want to forget the importance of the livestock industry and all of that. And so agriculture has always been a big part of Iowa's economy, and it's going to be even bigger in the future.
It is, and I, as I look at this, I make the statement often that from the beginning of agriculture, it was about raising food and fiber.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we always value-added a lot of different ways and got more sophisticated. Still food and fiber. Today, it's food, fiber, and fuel, renewable fuel. And I think that takes agriculture to another level up, just like the microchip did, took us
right.
out of the industrial age to the information age.
I agree completely. The opportunity is going to be truly... as one of our faculty members, Dr. Robert Brown, would say, it's going to be a revolution.
And
it's going to make a big difference in our future because we'll go beyond even the items you described in terms of food and fuel and fiber. And we're going to make all sorts of interesting things from biomass in terms of chemicals and plastics. Whatever is needed.
You're listening to Conversations with Congressman King. This is Steve King here with Wendy Winterstein, the Dean of Iowa State's College of Agriculture. And Wendy, you know, as I listen to this revolution that you mentioned, you have this revolution is attracting more people into agriculture, as I understand. And because, you know, I've often said that more dollars per acre is the answer to all the things we need to do ag-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And I think young people are starting to recognize that. And aren't they showing up? What do your numbers show of your enrollment in the College of Agriculture at Iowa State over the recent years?
Well, we are so proud of our numbers right now because this last fall we had a 15% increase in our students coming to Iowa State, and the year before that, 10%. So we are really on an upward trend again, and Congressman, it's because we're paying attention to what we need to do in terms of recruiting students from Iowa, the surrounding states, and really from the world. And my goal is to get our numbers, which are currently a little over 2,500, and get them up closer to 3,000. If we could do that, we could really be the College of Agriculture to come to in the Midwest.
Let me go on record here, Wendy, as saying that the increase in students at Iowa State's College of Agriculture is outpacing the increase in spending in the federal budget.
All right.
I mean, that's really encouraging, and I'm glad we didn't index it to your increase there, or we would be going off the charts. That's great news, but it also is an indication of how much future and potential is in agriculture. I'd like to just take you back, though, historically a little bit, and I think it comes to just a little bit before your arrival in the state of Iowa. I remember in 1983 going to a conference in March in Fort Dodge about drainage wells.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, it just seemed to me that we were in the beginning of starting to understand what pesticides in our water
mm-hmm.
did.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the presenter's name was David Huber, but it's been a long time.
Wow.
And I remember a conversation of they wanted to set a limit. They didn't separate pesticides in one kind or another. They were all in one category. And they wanted to limit the amount of pesticides at 12 parts per million. And that was the argument that we should not have drainage wells because the surface water goes in, farm chemicals go in, and then it increases the pesticides, and it's a risk to the health. And so I remember asking the question of how did you arrive at 12 parts per million? And the answer that I got back, and I don't want to attribute this to Mr. Huber, even if he was the fella, and I think he was, but the answer I got back was, well, there was a young girl that died from drinking water in a well that was polluted with 8 parts per million of pesticide, and so we just set it at 12. It was the other way around.
Sure.
She died from 12 parts, and they reduced it to 8 parts per million. Now we're dealing with sophisticated testing of parts per billion, separating the pesticides, understanding what it does. That science has come a long, long ways in the last 20 or some years, would you say?
Oh, definitely. And as the science has come forward, so has the management practices that our producers have placed on the land to address these issues.
What's interesting to me is that I was able to go to the Iowa Senate in 1996 and deal with finally getting the drainage wells closed and
mm-hmm.
compensating people for their loss, of course.
Yeah.
It seemed to me that running surface water into our underground aquifer, there was the only solution to that was stop.
I think you're exactly right. And now we have some bigger questions, especially as it relates to nitrogen and how we deal with this wonderful fertile land that we've implemented such great drainage systems through tile, how we figure out better science to essentially cut the pipe in terms of nitrogen getting into our rivers. And I think that would be the kind of this decade's question, similar to what you were talking about in the early 80s.
You know, and I look at some of that, some of those controlled drainage, and I mean, you're listening to Conversations with Congressman King, and we're here with Wendy Winterstein, Dean of Iowa State's College of Agriculture. And Wendy, there are some of those drainage systems now that recognize that we put drainage tile in, mm-hmm. they run all year round, 365 mm-hmm. days a year, and they pull the nitrates down through into the water and dump it out into our streams. And a lot of that's our highly cost of our nitrogen fertilizer, mm-hmm. and we only really need those drainage systems working a couple of months out of the year when we put the crop in, take it out, and then, of course, anytime we need to go in and do any kind of applications. And so some of these controlled and managed drainage systems, they're setting levels in there so that they can hold that right. that water in the soil and let the crop pick up the nutrients. Are you watching that? Are you working with that at Iowa State?
We certainly are. We're looking at everything we can to see what the options are to help producers with these better, again, improved management practices to do just what you described. And that just simply has to be a focus. And I think we're going to get better and better at it.
I would point out that, you know, I have a long history working in the Land Improvement Contractors Association and with our permanent practices, terraces, dams, waterways, and, of course, our drainage systems. And the lead thinker on this, in my judgment, is Charlie Schaefer down at AgriDrain in Adair, Iowa, who has pioneered this and led this. And something like 8 million corn acres in America that are 2% slope or less that mm-hmm. are conducive to this kind of an approach. And then we also have the Iowa cattlemen who are working with the means of trying to find an uptake of the nutrients by injecting the feedlot runoff into the subterranean tile system that can be controlled so the nutrients can be picked up in a wetland type of a scenario.
Mm-hmm. And I think in this new bioeconomy that we'll see some very targeted placement of perennial grasses that can be used for cellulosic ethanol that will perform an environmental function of taking up nitrates early in the year and even in the fall prior to senescence. So there's going to be some opportunities here from the environmental side of things in this bioeconomy as well.
You know, and I think about how that works, too. I mean, I look at a lot of feedlots, and year after year, they go in and they chop the silage around the place, bring it into the pit silo, and then and blend their grain with their feed mix and go out and cut some hay and those kind of things. We could see that kind of an operation become an operation where you had a wetland application of the feedlot runoff of the subterranean tile. The nutrients get picked up by a cellulosic product, maybe a switchgrass or in that kind of a scenario. I know Reed's canary grass grow pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then that could maybe go into either a feed or it could go into a cellulosic
right.
For ethanol. And we get to a little bit more of a symbiotic relationship mm-hmm. here where the only thing that goes off of the farm then right. becomes the meat.
Right. You really have a closed loop. That's correct.
And that is energy conservation, mm-hmm. it's feed conservation, mm-hmm. and it's conservation of our nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us in about 30 seconds or so, Wendy, a little bit of the future of agriculture, where you see this thing going again?
Well, again, you started off with this discussion. It's all going to be about the bioeconomy. And when I say the bioeconomy, I certainly include what we're going to do in the broad area of fuel and other products being developed from biomass. But we're also going to maintain a strong livestock industry in this state. The two have to grow together, and we need both of them to achieve the kind of economic return we want to see from agriculture. So that's going to be the big deal, and that's what we're going to be focused on. We're going to use every tool we have available to help make that change, help us move forward and take advantage of this great opportunity.
And Wendy Winterstein, the Dean of Iowa State's College of Agriculture, you know, as I just wrapped up the things that we talked about, and I'd love to go down this path with you with biotech, transgenics, and all the things that are out there. Great time for a great opportunity for Iowa agriculture and the future for our young people. Thank you, Wendy Winterstein, Dean of Iowa State's College of Agriculture.
Thank you.
Please join us next time on Conversations with Congressman King. For more information on any of the topics mentioned today, visit the website at house.gov/Steve King.